Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. As we said, today we're devoting to the men and women who make our country move, the workers in our midst, the workers who do everything from teach our kids to file our files to build our buildings to whatever people do to make a living in America. September is often Labor Day in America, and we think of Labor Day, but the rest of the world celebrates it on May the 1st. So we are doing a little celebration like that today in our joined in the studio now by a group called the Young Trade Unionists. Corey McCrae is with us. He's board chair of the Young Trade Unionists. That's how I found out about it, through email and Facebook exchanges with Corey McCrae. And it's good to meet you, man. Good to have you in the studio.
Good to meet you, too.
Corey is also, assistant business manager for the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 24. George Hendricks is in the studio. He's executive board member of the Young Trade Unionists and is a former Baltimore City school teacher, now field representative for the Baltimore Teachers Union, Local 340. As a disclaimer, I must say that was my union like a long time ago when we first brought it into the city, and I was organizing that union. Ronald Edwards is with us. He's executive board member of the Young Trade Unions, Iron Workers Local 16.
Good to be here.
I get that right? Good to have you in.
Yes, sir.
And Jessica Ingrick of OPIEU, which is the Office and Professional Employees International Union, and she is the social media coordinator for the Young Trade Unionists. And no, you're not, are you? That was the guest who was going to be here.
No, I'm the financial secretary.
Financial secretary, good. We'll put that down there. Gotcha. Well, welcome. Good to have you all here. 410-319-8888 is the number to join in on this conversation, and we look forward to you partaking with us in this conversation. So talk a bit about what this group is, Corey. First of all, let me just – I'm sure there are a ton of listeners who have never even heard of the Young Trade Unionists. So I was kind of – I never heard of it either until I ran across y'all on Facebook.
Well, it started in November of 2009, so that's probably why you haven't heard of us. But we're out of the Metro Baltimore Council, AFL-CIO. We're all young workers out of that Al Central Labor Council, and we had a president, Ernie Greco, who decided to put this reinvigorate the Young Trade Unionists. And when he started it, he had a general meeting, and it was about 100 people in attendance. And he said, "Hey, I want to start the young workers and get some type of movement and get them back involved in the labor movement." It was a great idea. He put together an executive board. He appointed me as the chair, and we've been running ever since.
So I'm just curious what the four of you think, for what it means for you to be a union member. I mean, it's you know, most – it used to be a huge thing in America. One out of four workers in this country were union members. I mean, unions – without the unions, there'd be no 40-hour week. There'd be no weekend, as we like to remind people, without unions. It's why people had health benefits and had be able to have retirement. Retirement's being taken away from people right and left. We'll be meeting steelworkers tomorrow who are retired. Many of them lost their benefits. So, and now I think unions are down to maybe 12.5% of the population, something similar to that, something pretty low from where it was.
Yes.
So tell me what you, why you're still in unions. I mean, what does it mean to you all to be in a union other than that's your job?
Well,
go ahead.
For me,
Ron Edwards.
When I got into the union, it gave me direction. In other words, they told me, this is what we're going to teach you, and this is what you're going to receive after we teach you. And that was a pension, which is future, an annuity, which is future, and a pay, which I could work towards. So what it was is now I was a part of my future. It wasn't just a job. It was a career. And I remember these old timers, the guys that you talked about.
You're an iron worker.
Yes. Mm-hmm. These old timers back in the 60s and the 70s, and they went through this and they told me, they said, "Ronnie, it's hard work, but it's worth it." And in our union, I mean, we stick together as a brotherhood. You hear that term, brotherhood. Well, when you're 400 feet in the air, moving 10,000 pounds of iron around on a crane with a 60-mile-an-hour gust, you need somebody watching after you.
I would imagine. But you're not going to get me up there doing that. So I'm glad someone's doing it. It would not be me.
You got it.
I've done many jobs in my life, from painting bridges, and that was after painting bridges, I decided I'm not doing the high up work. I'll leave that to somebody else.
It's not
else.
For the faint hearted.
Have mercy. It's a long way up there to look down. But I'm curious. I mean, all of you enter unions for different reasons. I mean, you know, if you're an electrical worker or an iron worker, a lot of you guys are trained by the union in the skills to become electricians or iron workers, right?
Right.
That's how you both got into the work.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I'll be honest with you, Mark. I didn't know about the unions. I came into it because I knew it was a lot of money to be made, and they showed the direction that it looked like you could make a lot of money with the local unions. I actually thought it was too real to be true. I noticed that I didn't want to go to college at the time, and they had free apprenticeship programs. And I was like, well, you're going to teach me how to be an electrician for free. And that was a great asset for me. And after that, I realized that the wages, it was a good living wage. I wasn't very concerned about health care due to the fact that I was 20 years old. But then when I noticed, hey, I got health care now, and then I started having kids, it tells you, hey, I'm glad that I have health care. And like Ron said, when you're young, you're not thinking about your retirement or a pension or annuity, but these are the things in life that people take for granted, and these are the people, the unions are the people that brought them there.
Now, the two of you are George Hendricks and Jessica Ingrid are white-collar workers, right?
If you say so.
Well, you're a teacher.
Yes, you're right.
Right. You know, I mean, you don't know how to work. As a teacher, you can wear anything you want pretty much, but I mean, you didn't have to be in a union to get either one of your jobs.
No, you don't have to be, not in a teacher.
So why?
Well, for me, my story is a little different from Corey's. You know, I went to college and I came out and I started teaching.
Where'd you teach?
I taught at Calverton Middle School for 4 years and Renaissance Academy High School, which was a new charter school that we started. And I remember when I first started, there was an election for officers of the union, and I tried to go vote. And I was told that I couldn't vote because I was not a member of the union. And something struck me. I said, you know, I was taught all my life that you have the opportunity to vote. Go voice your vote. And I couldn't vote because I wasn't a member, so I became a member. I began to get involved more, and I've been on both sides. I worked in the jobs that paid minimum wage, mm-hmm. and then I had a blue-collar job, as you would say. Mm-hmm. And I noticed some things that I could just be fired at a drop of a dime when I had those jobs at the minimum wage jobs. There was no one who had my back, you know, and I started to look around. I said, you know, it's real strength here. And that's how I got involved, you know, and that's why I'm still here today. I'm now fight for the rights of the teachers and paraprofessionals of Baltimore City. So I really enjoy what I do, but I look at some of the battles that we have personally, and just imagine if it was no union there, things wouldn't be as easy as they are for teachers.
And Jessica White, what about you?
My story is very similar to a lot of recent college grads. I actually studied biology in school. And my options were to go back to school, and I didn't want to incur any more student loans at that point in time. And I really couldn't make a solid living wage just entering the workforce using my degree. So I went and looked for another job and was introduced to the labor movement through my company that I work for now. And I'm very lucky because they're incredibly pro-union, pro-labor. So I've really learned the ins and outs and importance of having a union backing you to get all those benefits that we kind of think are out of reach for those people that are just, you know, entering the workforce.
Now, I make a couple of disclaimers here because I think it's important to do, to be honest and put stuff up front. I mean, I've worked for a couple of different unions, and I've always been known by some people saying being pro-union, and that so I'll just throw that out there. And I do that if this is a conversation between a union on strike with a business, I'd lay it out there too and try to be objective with everything. But I just want to put that out there. And I did, and I was an organizer for BTU when they first came here in the early 70s, late 70s when I was working at Mervo. Okay. And worked with some others as well. But so having said that, I mean, I'm going to ask you all some what I think are fairly tough questions about unions and why you're and where they are. I mean, there are some people who would say that unions have just lost their oomph, for want of a better word. I mean, there's been a huge split in the union movement. They're not too AFL-CIO is unions. SEIU and other unions broke off and created their own group with Unite Here and some others, and that the union movement is split, and that is also very small, and it's not doing much organizing, and that's where its power comes from. Some is organizing, and it's not going on. Are going on at very low levels. And one of the big fights right now with SEIU and other unions is who are they going to elect as president? They can elect somebody who wants union organizing. They can elect somebody who is going to lobby on Capitol Hill. And some of them might say, well, you know, union officials are so used to their Gucci shoes, they forgot what it means to be a worker. So, I mean, talk about what you think. I mean, you're going to be the leaders of tomorrow. Well, you're the guys who are going to run these unions.
Well, that's why we're here. That's why the Young Trade Unionists were formed. Because, you know, there was a lack of information given to young people in the trades. We're here to educate. You need to know that history of the unions that a lot of people don't know. So we need to re-energize ourselves, and that's exactly why we're here, because it's a forum. We have a common thing. You know, we all work for different unions. We do different things, but we have a common thing, and the common goal is that we're all young. And the fact that we're young, we have to learn that history so then we can move on. So there will be organizing and things. I'm very confident that it will happen.
Well, go ahead, Corey.
And Mark, I understand that you said that the labor movement sometimes is viewed as upon weak, but I always look at it sometimes as being a corporate agenda. And I say that from being as an organizer experience. If I was out in the field, I wouldn't see it hands-on. But trying to organize a company and having weak labor laws, and due to the fact that I just had a case down at the NLRB, and I saw where National Labor Relations Board, and I saw where a company fired a third of their workers or laid off, fired, got rid of, said that it was slow at the time due to the fact that they wanted to go union. So those are the challenges that I think that local unions have is having weak labor laws and needing some type of strength or some type of backing, such as the Employee Free Choice Act, is what I would say.
That's the bill that put a lot of unions behind Barack Obama when he was running for president, thinking that was going to come up to Congress and be voted on.
Right.
The bill meaning what?
The Employee Free Choice Act?
Yeah.
The bill meaning that it would be stronger for local unions to organize. You would have the opportunity to let them know whether you wanted a card check or whether you wanted a secret ballot election. And it would kind of do a tooth and nail with it, because it would have, if the unions were to win the election, they would have to bargain with you. Right now, they don't have to bargain with you. So those were some of the things. And it would be tougher laws and penalties if they were to fire the workers or do something illegal. And in that case that I was referencing to, that the company did pay money, but sometimes the company look at it like it's cheaper to just get rid of them and pay the fine that they have to pay instead of going union.
It levels the playing field is what it does. The Employee Free Choice Act levels the playing field, makes the penalties real. If you have a company that threatens their workers, saying, and it's funny, my son works for a food chain, and they came in and they talked to him and they said unions are bad and all this other stuff. And it's almost like they get him in a corner and they give him their spiel and they tell him about how bad unions are. But I'm an organizer, and I'm out there every day talking to the workers. And I've been threatened, told to get off the site, a lot of different things. But on the other hand, I've also been asked, say, I'd like to talk to you about this further. My boss, he doesn't supply me safety equipment he doesn't pay us in the morning while we load trucks. He only pays us once we get there, so he's only getting paid 6 hours a day or whatever. There's a lot of things that are not right. And the unions are for the workers. That's what we're for. We're there to represent the workers, not to bust the company. That's not what we want. That's not our focus. We're there to represent the workers.
So back – the Employee Free Choice Act is something that both sides of the quote-unquote labor movement support. Bottom line, they're there to better working families' lives. End of story. Doesn't matter whether it's Change to Win, AFL-CIO, mm-hmm. as it makes really no difference. What's, you know, politics that are going on at the top. That's why the young trade unionists get together, because we really want to educate people on the importance of being a union member, not being one side or another, or who, what union you're part of.
Let me open the phones here. We're talking to the young trade unionists. There are people here who represent a number of different unions, an organization called the Young Trade Unionists, made up of young people who are in unions. We're going to talk this hour about a number of things, from the waning power of unions, how they see the future going, the split inside the unions when it comes to environmental issues, and how that is addressed by what they think the future of that is as young people in unions. There's an article that I will refer to here, written by a union organizer, saying the problem with unions today is they've forgotten how to strike and stand up for workers, and we're going to talk about that and more. And what your experiences are, either as a union member, as someone who's tried to organize a union, as someone who's experienced working with unions, and just your general questions about what you think the future of unions are and their relevance to our society now in the 21st century. 410-319-8888. Corey McRae, George Hendricks, Ron Edwards, and Jessica Ingrecker are with us, four members of the Young Trade Unionists. 410-319-8888. Thomas in Churchville, you're on the air.
Hey, Mark, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call, sir.
Thanks for calling.
Hey, and good afternoon to your guest, by the way. I'm one who had very bad experience with unions. I would like to know, to ask you, the representatives and stuff there, why is it that when a person's coming into a company that has unions, there's a probationary period of 90 days. They company worked you 89 days and then laid you off. But during the time that they're working you the 89 days, they're taking union dues out of your check the whole time. But on that 89th day, the company laid you off just to rehire you 2 weeks down the road.
I can answer.
Go ahead.
Okay. First of all,
Ron Edwards.
In reference to the probation is we're getting a feel of what skills you have. And meanwhile, during that probation period, you are probably attending, in our local, I'm in the Iron Workers local, you're attending school, you're getting your welding certificates, you're getting all the safety and crane and rigging and signaling certificates that you need. In reference to your dues, I can give you an example of that. If you bought a house and you did not paint it ever, you didn't do anything, you didn't cut the lawn, it would look bad. All right, our dues go to manage. $1.2 million is our management fee to manage our pension plan, our health plan, our annuity plan. That's what it is. You can't just put money out there and nobody manage it. So that's where the monies go for our dues. I hope that clears things up for
Thomas,
you a little bit.
Is Thomas still with us?
On the 90th day, they terminate you.
Oh, okay. At the end of the day, you're right. You're right. I'm not going to argue with that. What that is when the job's done, the company lays you off, you go back down the union hall, and they send you out to another job.
But they send you right back to the same job 2 weeks later, which means your probationary period now restarts over again.
That's not how that works in our local, sir. With us, it keeps going. If you come in January and you got a 1 year probation, then that following January, you're ready to go. You'll be given your journeyman book.
Corey?
And Thomas, I'd just like to comment. I'm not sure what local union you're with, but I know what the IBEW, how it works is.
355, local 355.
How it works with the IBEW is that When you first come in, you're a first-year apprentice. Your first year, you are on a probationary period. You do have working dues coming out of your check, but you do not pay local union dues. And at that time, the only way that you can be put out or anything is if you're not passing tests, if you're not turning in your work reports, if you're not doing the productive things on the job, is how you will be laid off. So I can say in reference to what union I'm with, but I can't say what Local 355 does.
Thomas, thanks for your call. I'm glad you raised the issues you raised, and I think that what he's saying, though, I mean, there are people do have kind of issues with local unions and how things are managed and run. I mean, I think that, like, let's say your union, for example.
Okay.
Let me give one critique that I hear over and over again from teachers about the teachers union.
Okay.
And as I said, I was one of those people who helped bring the BTU into the school system as a shop steward at Mervo. But is that the union holds its elections at times that make it more difficult for teachers to vote, rather than making it simple. A, because people are arguing that the union leadership doesn't want to fear losing his job as president and vice president of the union. So instead of letting teachers vote at their schools, where they work every day, they can just put the ballot box in there and set up any system they want so teachers can vote at their school. They force them to do it in the evening when they're home with their families, go back out to vote rather than vote in their schools. Then some people argue that makes the union undemocratic by not giving teachers a real chance to vote in the place that they work.
Okay. Well, I really can't go in depth with the whole process of the elections. What I can tell you, however, that in the past, and this is from research, that it was done at one time by the paper and the ballot. There were challenges and there were issues with that, so they have since moved to a computerized way in which we do votes. Fortunately, if you put that at every school, that would be extremely expensive. So what we do as the field staff at the union, we sat down and we pretty much looked at where each school was located. And we said, well, you know, the election process is all day. And we pretty much said that these schools go to these locations. So at any point during that day, you have the ability to go to that particular location. So to have it at every school, it's really a financial burden.
Well, I'm not going to get into a thing about that. But each teacher I've talked to said it would be very simple to have a software program, a computer in a school, people touch the screen, that's who they vote for, goes to a central place. And part of it, because I raise that point, because part of it is that you guys are young leaders of unions, and some of the argument about unions is that union leadership remains entrenched, never moves on, never leaves, a lot like guys who go to Capitol Hill and become congressmen and senators, they're just there forever and never go anywhere. That part of the dynamic part of the union is the change in leadership and the real democratic fight inside the unions.
Well, I want to say that I know that all of our locals encourage young workers. I want to say all of us are at some level and a higher level in our local unions. But I think that we could all agree in this room that there are flaws in everything that exists. But one thing that we can agree on, one more thing that we can agree on, is that we'd rather work union than non-union. And the reasons why we would want to work union is because it's a better living wage, it's better health care. The non-union people can't grab those same type of ideas. And that's why we're taking the time to educate ourselves and educate young workers and what we're trying to do, because it's a lot of people that don't know about unions and different things like that.
Well, let me ask you this question. What do you think about this? This is let me go back to phones here, 410-319-8888. I want to know what our listeners think about their own union, what they think about if you're not in a union, what you think the future of unions are in America and the role it plays, but they'll play in the future of this country. 410-319-8888. When the miners went on strike a bunch of years back, there's a great line from Rich Trumka, who's now president of the AFL-CIO. And he's a pretty fiery speaker and an interesting guy. Miner, became a lawyer, head of the union, now he's the head of the AFL-CIO. This was a strike that went on, I guess it must have been 10 years ago. And he said that after they won the Pittston mine strike, which broke many laws, among them the Taft-Hartley law, which was put in there in 1948 to really stymie strikes and stop workers from walking out in solidarity with other workers, which I want to talk to you all about in a minute. He said, the labor laws in this country are formulated for labor to lose. And if you play by every one of those rules, you lose every time. So what do you all think about the idea that maybe if unions want to survive and have a strike that puts industry up against the wall to get the demands you need for regular working people, that you might have to break the law to do that? You might have to say no to Taft-Hartley. You might have to say if iron workers are striking, then the carpenters stay home too. Or if teachers are striking, then the food workers don't cross the line. That was the power of unions. I mean, they were able to do that. The only power unions really had was to strike and say, okay, we're shutting down until you come to the table with us. But that power has been taken away. How's that fit into the future of unions for y'all?
You want to better the lives of your membership. If you go ahead and try all the legal, you know, ways that you can do that, and you're not getting anywhere, are you supposed to just throw up your hands and say, "Oh, we tried. Too bad. Sorry. You're not going to get a raise this year. You're not going to get health care. Mm-hmm. There's no sick leave. Sorry." I think, you know, if you look at the history of the United States, I mean, the working people, the masses, if it's not going the way everyone feels it should be going, you really got to step up, rules or no rules, and say, you know, we need better. We deserve better.
And sometimes it's not breaking the rules. Sometimes it's thinking outside the box. Sometimes it's just being creative. You see a lot of petitions online. You see a lot of rallies. You see different things that make it instrumental to bringing up some type of social uplift, you know. And that's what it's all about, like Jessica said.
So, I mean, let's go to the phone. We actually going to take a break here? Is it time for a break? We got another minute or two. Take a break, he's saying. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Let's get a call, then we'll go to break. Taylor in Owings Mills, you're on the air. Hi, Taylor, you're on the air.
Hello?
Taylor, is that you?
Yes.
You're on the air.
Okay, I feel like that the gas prices and stuff. Yes.
Taylor, could you turn your radio down so we could, that's part of the feedback going on. There you go.
Okay, I feel like the gas prices that make people like lose their jobs and stuff for the financial recession and stuff, I think gas prices should go down. That's what I think, from my opinion.
So how does that relate to unions for you?
I think since the recession is going on, people are having a lot of struggle with money and stuff. And I think that people shouldn't have to go through the struggle of the financial recession.
Okay. I mean, people are struggling financially in America now. We all know that. Whether you have a union job or don't have a union job.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm curious about how you envision things changing for the industries you're in. I mean, construction is more non-union than union in this day's world. Mm-hmm. A lot of electrical workers are not organized in America. Most teachers are in unions in this country. And office and professional workers are not a group that's very organized. Though I've always used to say that if you organize all the secretaries and they quit, the entire city would shut down. in a heartbeat. So, I mean, talk about how that happens. What do you see What do you see the future is?
I think the future is educating the future of the labor movement, getting young people involved, getting them educated, creating some type of solidarity, letting them know why they should be in a union. And it's prime examples of what we're doing right now is trying to hold the career fair, the first annual networking and career fair, May 1st, 9 to 12 p.m. At 2701 West Patapsco Avenue. But we're trying to enlighten the young workers about the benefits of being a local union member. You are going to make better wages. You have somebody out here representing you. You just can't be fired for at will and different things like that. Employees have to have just cause, and teaching them what they should have. It's a right that we should have. It's a right that union workers have, and everybody should have that benefit.
We're going to come back and pick up on that thought and go back to the phones at 410-319-8888 as we talk with the young trade unionists. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by Johns Hopkins Medicine. For the 19th consecutive year, the Johns Hopkins Hospital is ranked number one by U.S. News and World Report in their annual Best Hospital Survey. Find out more about the nation's top hospital at hopkinsmedicine.org. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. We're joined this hour by the Young Trade Unionists. A lot of people called in to join this conversation. It's a group organized in the city of younger members of trade unions. We all know the trade unions are many people saying, losing the power they had in America. Some people say that's great. Some people saying, no, the future of America depends on strong unions. And we're talking about that this hour with our four guests. Corey McRae's in the studio. He's board chair for the Young Trade Unionists, and he's also assistant business manager for the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 24.
Yes, sir.
George Hendricks is in the house. He is executive board member of the Young Trade Unionists, and he is former Baltimore City school teacher and now a field rep for the Baltimore Teachers Union Local 340.
Yes.
And Jessica Ingrick is with us, and she is with the OPIEU and the Office of Professional Workers, and your job there is?
I'm a public relations manager for
public relations for the union. And we are joined by Ron Edwards, who is also an executive board member of the Young Trade Unions and is part of Iron Workers Local 16.
Yes, sir.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Let's go right to the phones and get you all on the air with the union members here. And we go to Campbell in Baltimore. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
My name is Campbell McLean. I teach in Baltimore City, and I'm a building rep with the Baltimore Teachers Union. A friend of mine, Genevieve Mason, and I are going to be running in the BTU election, the internal one on May 12th.
As what?
I had a quick question, if that's okay.
For what? What were you running? What are you running for?
We're both running for members at large.
Okay, gotcha.
I know that in the last election for the BTU, only around 10% of the teachers actually voted. And I know there's some things we could do about it to be simpler, like online voting, like you suggested in the schools. But I'm wondering if maybe your guests could comment on what they think that says about the union, only 10% are voting, and what maybe we could do about it.
That's a great question. You want to go right to the teachers union rep who's here? Didn't mean to put you in a hot seat, brother, but...
Not a problem.
You got it.
Not a problem. These are questions that I love. How are you today, Mr. McLean? Hello?
He's there. Go ahead.
Okay. In reference to your question about the turnout for voters, the track record shows that, you know, and we will and we are doing a better job of educating our members. There are other issues, not only just speaking about the election, but other issues where we need our membership in full force. You know, we go down to Annapolis every year for legislative sessions, and we ask teachers to go. And we almost have a union of 9,000 teachers and paraprofessionals, and we only have one busload or two busloads. So we are doing a job of educating our members. We have the information online. You know, you have the information in your schools when you can come vote. You know, and we have to get those people motivated to get their interest back in the union. Because you are a union member, you are the union. You make up the union, so you can stop by the office anytime you want. You can be part of any committee that you want. You could have been on the committee for elections and bring those ideas as to what you want to see in the upcoming elections.
I guess we could do a whole program on the teachers union, which I think we should do, and some other unions as well. I mean, so I don't want to focus just on the teachers union this hour, but I mean, it says something when members are in unions and not fully active in them. And as young people in unions, I mean, that's part of what you're supposed to be doing, right?
And I want to just say, just to comment on, elections, I want to say the IBEW Local 24 has over 50% turnout when they're voting on the elections and different things like that. And going to Annapolis and the rallies and different things like that, we get good turnouts. And one of the things that we also do is the Polar Bear Plunge, one of the Maryland's nonprofit things that they do, the single nonprofit that they do. But we had a good turnout for that. That was our first year getting in on. And I know a lot of local unions did that. So they are doing good things. And I think that it is a lot of participation within L.
Can I speak to the bigger picture here?
Please do.
That's kind of what the purpose of the Young Trade Unionist group is to combat apathy with education. I think a lot of people don't fully understand unions and what their benefits are. So why would they come out and support, you know, an election that they don't really have all that much, you know, knowledge of? So what we're here for is to make sure that people are educated in the reasons that unions are in existence, just first and foremost.
Let me go back to the phones here, 410-319-8888, and next caller up is Julian in Woodstock. You're on the air. Julian, you're on the air. Did we lose Julian? You there?
Yes.
Yeah, you're on the air, Julian.
Yes, good evening. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I have a comment that's kind of like an observation, and that is when unions first started in this country, I could see there was a real need for it because these folk in charge of industry and such, they were really taking advantage of the workforce, and I understand that. But I think we've reached a point that in a lot of segments of the industries that are, you know, running the country and stuff, that unions have kind of outlived their usefulness. I'm not saying to do away with unions. There are some segments of this is it's in dire need. But, you know, there are some jobs out here that you can get that are just great. You know, at what point does a union tell its membership that we've argued and negotiated for a good contract, but at what point does it reach a level that it's worth more than the work that you're doing? You know what I'm saying? I just think that in a lot of areas that they could just back down, and then that might attribute to why a lot of jobs are transported overseas, can't compete with the pricing and such like that. But at some point, it should level off. But once you reach that level, if it's agreed upon by both industry and workforce, you know, terminate unions. You know, just freeze whatever those benefits are at that time, and that'll be the end of it. And go to a segment of the society that really needs a union.
All right. Let me let the union people speak to that. Who wants to grab this one? You look like you're about to jump to the phone. Jessica, let me let you start.
Okay. Can we just step back to the most recent tragedy that we all know about is the 29 miners that died because of unsafe mine conditions in West Virginia. I think if that doesn't speak to the fact that, you know, you need unions in America today, then nothing does. The reasons we have union is to increase workplace safety, to make sure that people have a living wage, that they have benefits for their family members. If you surveyed the entire country, and I would say even more than 20% of people came back and said, no, I have enough benefits, I make enough money, I'll go home. That's totally fine with me. But that's not the case. If you look at a wide scale, you know, survey of Americans, and if there was really truly an agreement between the workforce and employers, we really wouldn't, you know, if that was the case, then we wouldn't need unions. That's the purpose of unions, is to make sure that there is an agreement. You can't do away with unions and have an agreement between an employer and employee. It just doesn't work like that in real life.
Corey and Ron. Corey, then we'll go
all right. Also, I think it's a good, healthy thing to have the union work along with management. I mean, it doesn't have to be clubs and bats. It doesn't have to be that. And, when you say, just do away with the union and let everything just be okay, in all actuality, how long do you really think that would last? Because we all know when we're bargaining for money, people do funny things, so I think that if the union and management are getting together, then the system is working correctly, and when they're not, we need to find out where we can mend those difficulties.
I just want to say I had a lot of questions. I mean, the same question that Julian referenced into, and I just talked to those people, and I say, well, you're just uninformed about local unions. I said the companies are always going to harass, they're always intimidating, they're always fine people for not just cause, but they're going to continue to do that. And so what are we supposed to just take some type of secret honor or just give them, they give us their word, hey, I'm going to do the right thing if unions go away. And I heard one thing he said, that maybe that's why the country's in this situation that they're in. Well, why should we be penalized for making a good wage? Why should we be penalized for having health care or having a retirement? I don't think that the unions are the problems. I think that big business is the problems, or corporate business is the problems.
The caller made a comment that, that's why a lot of jobs go overseas because of the union. You know, when you look at a company, when you look at a big business, they're there to make money. So, of course, if I can go over there to get the cheap labor, to get the labor that's not represented because, they're not going to want anything, that's where they're going to go. It's not because you have a union. You know, that's not the issue. The issue is they don't want to pay you what you're worth. They don't want to give you your fair share because, you do a good job. You do a great job, but I can get a substandard job here, so that's where I'm going to go. And at the union, we protect those rights. We want to make sure that our people have the best wages, have the best benefits. So it's not a thing of, it's the union's fault. If anything, we strengthen America, and you open up the show. The unions is what built America. So, you don't want to take what built America away.
And if I could say one more thing, when the caller said, we've outsourced. Here's the scary part. I was born 1960. Here's the scary part. Right now in the United States, you name me how many steel companies are owned by the U.S. Right now at Sparrows Point down in Dundalk, that's owned by the Soviet Union.
A Russian company.
Yes. Severstal, a Russian company. Let's go back a little bit. Did you ever think that that would happen? And that's kind of scary to me, seeing the world, its unrest and terrorism and all that, that we can't just make a destroyer like that. We can't do that anymore. And what happens if something were to happen? We can't just turn our factories on. It's not that easy. It takes a month just to get the furnace hot enough to make steel. So when we think like that, that I don't know about you, but that scares me when we start to outsource and outsource and outsource until our whole manufacturing is gone.
And one thing nobody mentioned was that when you go overseas, that it's not a fair level playing field. They have no OSHA. They don't have the same standards and the laws that we have. That's why we need to fix our trade agreements and different things like that. That's why they're going overseas. So I don't think that it's the unions that's the problem. It's just that big business just see it as the bottom line, and we're not dealing with a first generation company that usually take care of people and wanted to give their employers vacation and a good living wage and different things like that. We're dealing with the third generation that went to school, and the only thing that he sees is the bottom line. I got to fix the numbers.
410-319-8888. As we have a conversation with young trade unionists, Pete in Parkton, you're on the air. Hi, Pete, you're there.
I'm Chuck, IBW Local 24. First off, I want to commend those young trade unionists out there taking their time to explain and educate youngsters about what unions have brought to America. I mean, that's the problem in the country today. Unions did too good of a job to bring out, good wages, good working conditions, pensions. Pensions are a thing of the past now. It's all 401ks. Anybody that had 401k money in this past debacle up at Wall Street, they have half of what they had. But if a person has a pension, he is still going to get that pension money. And that's something that unions have negotiated for their workers. And in today's schools, the only thing you hear about unions are strikes and the bad things. You don't hear about the wages, the benefits, the pensions that unions fought for. You know, the 40-hour work week, 8-hour work day, 12 hours child labor. The unions did too good of a job, and I just thank you for taking the call.
Thank you, Pete. What Pete just said, though, I mean, some people argue that unions are in such a weak position they really can't really protect their workers. They can't stop a factory from moving out. They can't stop people from being laid off and losing their jobs anymore. They can't protect people's benefits from being squashed and thrown out by the company because of the power of big business you keep talking about, Corey. And so how do unions address that? I mean, how do you address what seems like the lack of balance on the playing field between unions and business?
One way is to get our young men and women involved in the political struggle, to get involved in what each representative is saying and make a change. And that's what we're trying to teach some of these young men and young women who come into and work with us. We're trying to get them involved in what's going on and how they can change it.
I just want to say what we're trying to do is, as a movement, we're trying to educate, create solidarity and activism. And what I mean by educate is we got to learn from our past mistakes to go into the future. And this is why we hold our general meetings every first Monday of the month. And this month, we're actually May 3rd, it falls on, and it's at 7 o'clock, 2701 West Patapsco Avenue. But we have three different parts of the AFL-CIO because a lot of people don't know how the structure is. And who we invited as guests is one of our, I guess some people will call him a dinosaur, but I just call him one of the greatest guys known to man in this place is Ernie Greco, you know, and he can kind of show us a different thing. We invited our state federal AFL-CIO leader, President Fred Mason, and then we invited somebody from the national level, Miss Sandy Felder. So they want to come out and help us. They want to come out and educate us, and the solidarity part is so crucial due to the fact that we're living in neighborhoods where neighbors don't even speak to themselves. So we got to join amongst ourselves, and then we can create that activism, hold more rallies, hold people more accountable, and do different things like that. And that's what the Young Trade Unionists is trying to create.
Let me go back to the phones here. And Clarence in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Good evening, Mark. Thank you for taking this call.
Mm-hmm.
I have a two-part question. Where does the union feel that union presidents and members feel that their responsibility to help the society that they exist in with socialist issues? For instance, if the mayor of the city council were to come to your union members and say, I've made a deal with some local suppliers and I need some skilled labor to help take care of some of these vacant houses, but at this point in time, we can only pay 65% of scale. However, at the completion and once we get the program rolling, we will pay back the additional, you know, 35% or 40% into the union to redistribute to its members. What would you say to something like that?
40% into the union to redistribute to its members.
Okay, who wants to grab that one?
For me, taking less than what you are supposed to be making could be a slippery slope. If you start taking jobs that, you know, promise you payment toward the end, but we're going to pay you less up front, that's not something you really want to jump right into.
I think, Clarence, what we all do, we have a collective bargaining agreement, so we can't breach out of that collective bargaining agreement. And if my city or if my city council president or mayor came and told us to work for less wages, I would tell him that We are the union, but we're not going to go backwards. And at the same time, that's what we fought for. That's why I pay taxes. I hope that he will be paying prevailing wage on the job. I hope that he will make sure that the safety standards are correct and different things like that. Not that I don't want to budge, but we got to follow the rules. That's why we do have a collective bargaining agreement, and that's what we fought hard to get for those things.
One other thing as well is, and I agree with what was just said, but also we have used our apprentices as volunteers to build playgrounds for churches. We've done that. So say if this was one or two buildings that needed, I'm an iron worker, so say they would need some steel in there or something. We have done that. We've had members do that for free. So, just to take their time out on a Saturday and do that. So, on that side, depending on how big it is, of course, and how much time, I go, that wouldn't be a problem at all. We could do that for a community group.
Well, I have a follow up. Clarence, you still there? Do you have a second question, real fast? Clarence.
I have a follow
up. Okay, so let me ask them. One of the things that cities need to redevelop themselves, and there are people who are in the inner cities with no employment, no money. And people say one of the ways you rehab a city is to put people to work by rehabbing those houses and rebuilding the buildings and rebuilding their neighborhoods and putting them to work. Now, how do you do that when a city is broke and you want prevailing wages? How do you do that? I'm not saying you shouldn't have prevailing wages. I'm saying how do you do that?
Pension monies. A lot of times the different unions invest their pension money into a project. And when we invest our pension money into a project, sometimes the agreements for that project are. that they use, for, I'll use the city, for instance, that they use city people for the different parts of the job. Say we could hire some pre-apprentices, all right, and they would be guaranteed a wage. And that's some of the benefits that our pensions can be used for. And I think it's very creative. And not only does it help the city, but it also helps people who may not have a skill under their belt, so to say, and get dirty a little bit and say, wow, I might want to do this. They get to work with union members. Those union members teach them certain things. And I think it's a great way to learn a little bit about a business and make a decision whether to do it or not.
Let me try to get one more quick call in here, and then I have a last question. 410-319-8888. Amelie in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Evening, Mr. Steiner. Good evening. And good evening, panel.
Good evening.
You guys, I give you high props for coming on and speaking. I'm a unionist. I belong to Ask Me Local 1535, and I'm also an IMPEC member. So I'm very active with my union. And one of the things that I have seen in my 24 years of union work is that there is a fear, especially in Baltimore, of belonging to unions. It's recently changed with O'Malley giving big props to the union because the union helped him get elected governor. But also, there's not enough members. If we have more membership, then we would have more power. And I'm so glad that you have this on the radio so that people all over Baltimore can hear. The amount of money that you spend, it's like tithing. You put a little money in the union, and you have a big voice. Mm-hmm. And the more people that are in that union, the bigger the voice, the more power that union has, the more influence it has to sway politically as well as socially. So I want to tell those young people, this is the new wave, and I love to see you guys coming and keep up the good work. Thank you very much.
Corey?
Thank you. Before we leave, Mark, I just wanted to share, too, the Young Trade Unionists were hosting their first annual networking and career fair. Once again, it's May 1st, 2010, 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. The location is 2701 West Patapsco Avenue, Baltimore, Maryland, 21230. And the keynote speakers that will be there, the Honorable Elijah Cummins and Delegate Cheryl Glenn. And the participants will receive information on the benefits of being a union member and the various job opportunities that union members provide. But I'd like to really give a special thanks for our sponsors, our local unions, the IBW Local 24, UFCW Local 27, the Plumbers and Stainfitters Local 486, the Operating Engineers Local 37, Sheet Metal Workers, Insulators Local, Seafarers Inlets, the Boilermakers, the Bricklayers, the Baltimore Teachers Union, the Painters, the IIT, which is the stage and theatrical employees, Ask Me Council 67, OPEIU Local 2, Roofers Local. They will all be there, and I encourage everyone to come.
Phew, that's a lot to get in one breath, brother.
Yeah.
This has been an interesting show, and I want to thank you all for being here. Corey McRae, who you just heard, George Hendricks, Ron Edwards, and Jessica Ingrick, thank you all for being in the studio. And you can go to Young Trade Unionists on the website and go to the Facebook page.
Twitter,
and they're there.
YouTube.
They're all over the place. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Remind you all, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Stop by one of its 7 branches or go to mecu.com for more information. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Christina Arison. We're engineered by Zachary Coleman. Our interns are Judith Lloyd, Richard Good, and Felicia Faison. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, as well as find out about our guests, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development.